The Israel Report with Roly Marx for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Roly Marx, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Shavua Tov. Always a pleasure to talk to you first thing in the morning at the beginning of the week. And should I be pleading the fifth on the comment that came in? Because you know I have a big soapbox when it comes to these issues.
I know, but Zanati's saying that there's some truth into it, in it. I could never have said it.
Well, as somebody who's never met a microphone I didn't like or opportunity to speak, I didn't
like. Look.
Maybe I should quit while I'm ahead this morning.
Yeah, listen, I don't know what it says about me then, but alright. Anyway, there you have it. At least we can have these conversations in a good-hearted and fun way. Alright, Rolina, there are some serious issues that are unfortunately taking place in your neck of the woods. King Abdullah does not renew the Island of Peace land lease to Israel. What does this mean? I've seen headlines about it. I don't really fully understand the significance of this.
Okay. Well, the significance is, well, very significant because Israel and Jordan have had a historical peace agreement, which we signed in 1994. Now, part of that agreement was that special arrangements were made for bits of land in the north, near the southern Arava Desert. And even though the land had belonged to Israel for decades and had been farmed by Israelis, under the treaty, it was transferred to Jordan, but then leased to Israel. So, you know, in the spirit of cooperation, Jordan said that even though they're taking the land, they'll continue to lease it to Israel. Farmers could continue to farm. You know, it became known as the Isle of Peace or the Island of Peace because Jordanians and Israelis were working well together. It was seen as an Israeli enclave inside the Kingdom of Jordan. And it's also, of course, very strategic because it holds the remains of the hydroelectric power station, which was built by Jews in 1921. So it's been very, very successful so far. And according to the agreement, it kind of was a lease that would be renewed in perpetuity. I mean, even 3 years after the agreement was signed, when a group of schoolgirls from Beit Shemesh went to an outing in Naharayim, which is very close to the areas, when they were killed by terrorists, King Hussein went and visited their families. So it really was an example of the fact that peace could be signed with our neighbors. It could be a lasting peace. We could work well together. Now, it's coming up to 25 years, and last night, on what is now the eve of the anniversary of 25 years, King Abdullah, who is King Hussein's successor, made an announcement that they will not be renewing the lease, which of course has caused a lot of concern for the farmers in the area, for bilateral relations between Israel and Jordan. And it wasn't just that it's caused tension and concern because we have this very important peace agreement, but also the wording that King Abdullah used, which shows that he's perhaps giving in to the more fundamental or the street in Jordan. You know, he used terminology like, we're taking back our sovereign land. We are practicing full sovereignty in our land. Our priority is to protect our interests and do what is required for Jordan and Jordanians. So of course this is opening up a whole lot of new discussion. Where will we lie with the peace treaty? Who stands to lose what? And is this because we had tension with the Jordanians last year when we had the issue with the embassy and ambassadors were recalled?
It also could signify the fact, the political weakness on his side back home, because generally this type of move is undertaken when you're trying to, as you said, garner as much support as possible from a certain element within your own environment or kingdom. So I would imagine that this signifies some kind of slippage with regard to his political power.
Well, you are absolutely right, because there are issues in Jordan with regards to the economy. The economy is slowly weakening, and many of us are of the opinion that in order to give into the more radical in Jordan, in order to, you know, soothe tempers over economic pressure, he's choosing to make these kind of announcements. He's choosing to kind of distance himself from the state of Israel. The other theory that a few of us have been debating is that because Israel and the U.S., the ties are so good and the ties are so strong, and the ties between the Palestinian Authority and the U.S. are extremely strained at the moment. He is putting his backing behind the Palestinian Authority. He's strengthening the Palestinian Authority. And also the fact that the Trump administration has cut so much funding to UNRWA, the UN agency or relief works agency for Palestinian refugees, it affects the nearly 2.5 million Palestinians who live in Jordan. So a cutting in that funding has a direct impact on them.
Amazing. So interesting indeed. All right, moving on to the next conversation, which is a Hamas rejects Egyptian demand to stop protests. So I think we've seen again the fact that that Egypt has been trying to get involved.
Yes, and it's very, very important, because, you know, while we're talking about the partners in the region that we do have peace with, very important, very strategic that we have peace agreements with both Jordan and Egypt. And Egypt has been playing a significant role in trying to broker a lasting ceasefire between Hamas and Israel. And Egypt have said to Hamas, please, you need to stop these weekly demonstrations along the border with Israel. It's only going to escalate. We were bracing ourselves for a very, very tense weekend. I know that the IDF did shoot down several incendiary devices that were being flown into Israel or launched towards Israel. And the Egyptian officials have said, please, A, you need to stop this. And B, if you are going to have these kind of protests, these stay at least 500 meters away from the border. And Hamas has rejected that offer, which is quite interesting, because just on Thursday we were talking about the fact that they were very concerned that there was a possibility, because of escalating tensions, that the Egyptian intelligence minister would not be coming to the region, and that it's you know, that they blamed whoever fired missiles and projectiles into Israel, the long-range missile that hit a home in Beersheva, that Hamas and other terror groups have called that very, very irresponsible. So, you know, it's very interesting to watch where Hamas are positioning themselves at the moment. Perhaps it is also an event more directed at the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian Authority's lack of control over the Gaza Strip.
Fascinating, because if Hamas loses, what does it mean if Hamas loses Egyptian support in their political game, in the political war or political game that that is being played here?
Well, that's a very, very good question. First of all, the Egyptians have no time for the Muslim Brotherhood, of which Hamas are an offshoot of. So they know that there already is this feeling amongst the Egyptian government. If they lose the backing of the Egyptians, Hamas lose what is starting to be their campaign of trying to get some kind of credibility as a legitimate player in the region. You know, the world recognizes the Palestinian Authority as the negotiating partner of Israel, as the legitimate rulers of the Palestinian people. Hamas is still seen as a terror organization, and they've been slowly going on a campaign. We saw it with the changing of the language in their charter. We've seen it with them trying to engage on social media with journalists and with English speakers and speakers of different language. Incidentally, Howard, they still haven't gotten around to my questions that I ask them. That's a whole other discussion.
No shock there.
Mm-hmm. Pardon?
I say no shock there.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't holding my breath, thank God. But if they lose the backing of Egypt, then any shred of credibility that they are trying to build has gone.
Amazing. Okay. So we're going to keep an eye. We're going to keep an eye on that story. And of course, it's that time of year that we remember Rabin.
Well, remembering Rabin, and I tell you, I can't believe it's, you know, it was 1995. Dare I do the maths?
Yeah, it's not a short time ago.
It's not a short time ago, and we remember the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, a tremendous figure in Israeli history. And what we did hear last night, which was very interesting, on Har Tzion, on Mount Zion, where commemoration ceremonies were held, and they were held in the foreign ministry, in the Knesset, of course, on Mount Zion, that there's a concern that, and this has come from his granddaughter, Noah, who said that many of the officials in this country participate in flaming the fans of the bonfire of excitement. And this has created a lot of controversy this morning, as you can well imagine, because on one hand, you've got Prime Minister Netanyahu hailing Yitzhak Rabin as a Zionist patriot of the first rank, and those who are familiar with Rabin will know that he was a hawk who became a dove, and he was assassinated because he was speaking about peace with our neighbors, and he was assassinated because he had signed the Oslo Peace Accords. He was assassinated by a right winger in Israel. And now we're also hearing from his granddaughter. She is concerned, her generation is concerned, that some of our government is becoming far too right wing. And so this has opened up a debate, and many are saying that criticism of Israel is considered treason. So a lot of talk shows have a lot to talk about today, Howard.
Yeah, indeed. Wow. It's very, very troubling. Very, very troubling, as always, when we look back on the past and we try and figure out what everything means. Fazulu says, Shalom Rolin, Jordan is as upset as most of the world on apartheid type land theft by Israel, and Sisi is not a legitimate leader. That is from Pazulu. I don't know how you want to respond to that.
First of all, shalom to Pazulu. It's always nice to talk to you. I've missed you, Pazulu. I've missed your messages. But no, these lands weren't part of any kind of land grab. These were lands that were leased, not given, leased to Israel, with good intention, in good faith. And I think this is more about trying to show strength to the street in Jordan than making any kind of political statement into, you know, what is happening in Israel.
And I think that's what's important. I think that's what's important here, Pazulu, is the fact that this was actually an arrangement entered into between two legitimate governments. And it was an agreement which is now not continuing. It wasn't at all about any so-called land theft. So I'm not sure where that even comes from. I think what you're doing here, unfortunately, Pazulu, and I'm very happy to engage at any time, and I think you know that, is you're just throwing out verbiage. It's just words. It's just words that you've heard and you regurgitate, rather than engaging in a real discussion, because none of this is a discussion. It's just throwing out the words apartheid. It's throwing out the words land theft. It's legitimate leadership. It's just words that are almost like mud that you throw and hope that it's going trying to cause some kind of a reaction. We're always very, very open to have a rational conversation, but it needs to be based on something and not just a whole lot of trigger words that you think might cause damage. And in fact, they do. But there you go. It is 8 o'clock. Roland Marks, this is where we love and leave you. But fortunately, you'll be back with us tomorrow morning.